welcome. It is Dying Scene Radio, episode number 17. I'm Bob Noxious, hanging out with my good buddy over here, Bobby Pickles, and we got a special guest host in the studio. Everybody say hey to Ben Weasel. Hey, Ben.
Hi. Who's going to say hello? They're just listening on a podcast. We don't have an audience.
It's theater of the mind, Ben. We like for everybody to just enjoy themselves and listen in. You know, it's kind of like it's a real thing.
That's right. They're going for a ride. They're going for a ride, and they got our voices to guide them along. And we're in three different places here. You know, Bob, we always seem to start off with a little weather report from now and again. I'd be interested to find out how Madison, Wisconsin's doing as far as weather on this fine evening.
It's a beautiful evening out here. We've had a lot of rain lately, but it was a sunny day today, warm. The sun has not set yet, so it's kind of twilight out there right now. I'm out down on the farm tonight. I'm usually not, but I've got some work to do, so I'm down here, and it's beautiful out there. I can see the alfalfa fields and hear the lowing of the cattle, as it were, and it's very nice.
You're out on a farm, Ben?
Out on my farm.
What kind of stuff do you grow out there? Do you eat everything that
it's
you grow?
Just, no. I mean, I'm not doing like vegetables and stuff. It's just feed for the cows. You know, your alfalfa, hay. Cows just love hay.
You know, Bob's down there in Florida, man. It's actually the largest livestock state in the union. I don't know if you're aware of that.
I wasn't aware of that. That's really, and that's the kind of fact that you can really sink your teeth into. And I don't, a lot of times people, I do a podcast with Owen Murphy, and he's a wonderful gentleman and he's a good friend, but he just doesn't see, when I say things like what you just said, he either just ignores me or he acts like I'm an idiot for bringing it up. But really, when you say something like that, or you say to a person, for instance, California is actually a state that produces more dairy than Wisconsin. Now, that interests me. That's right in my wheelhouse because of my line of work. And that's a fact, and a lot of people don't know that.
So basically, you're saying Owen Murphy is your Bob.
I don't know. You're both. Bob, you're both. Bob. Well, one of you is Pickles, and one of you is... Listen, I'm sure you guys got all kinds of plans for your show, and God forbid I should stand in your way and impede you in any way, shape, or form, but I got a couple questions. First of all, I went to your website, Pickles,
fatenzo.com,
and saw that you've got a model for these t-shirts that you're selling. And first of all, I wanted to commend you really on giving work to the homeless. That's fantastic. But what's going on with that cat? What makes that guy tick?
Did you do some research on me or something? Are we on the same wavelength? Are we on the same consciousness?
No, I just went to your website. There's this thing called the internet.
Ben, that person is actually a homeless man. He's the bum. I call him the bum. I'm not lying either, actually. He lived in Penn Station for like 8 years. I met him when I moved to New York City. And when I started my t-shirt company, he came with me, he lives with me. And every shirt we make, I throw
it
on him.
He lives with you?
Yeah.
So he's not homeless.
He's not homeless now, but he was.
Well, you know what? I feel like a heel then for trying to be a smart guy and making a joke.
That's what I'm saying. We're on the same wavelength. You picked that out and you knew that that gentleman was a bum. That's fantastic.
Well, you know, and in my defense, he looks like a bum. I mean, it's really, you know, I'm not a swami or anything. It's kind of, you know, he looks like those might not be his original teeth.
He actually doesn't have any front. He's going to kill me, by the way. I cannot. Oh, my God. If he hears this. Do you have a bum dar?
No, I mean, people can judge for themselves, but I think if the average person were to go over to that website,
fatenzo.com,
they would say the same thing which I said, which is this Pickles guy. I mean, he's really, you know, this is a guy with some character because he's given work to the less fortunate. I don't think it's me.
That's the shtick, and I hope to grow, and as we build the catalog, my insane idea is to just throw every shirt on him, take him out in the back, and then take the picture.
Well,
hire no models.
Listen, I think it's good, yeah, because in the old days, the indigent and the transients of the world, at least in our great country, you know, they were looking for work. They weren't looking for a handout. They were looking for work. They were looking to, you know, somebody give them a leg up. And, you know, that's what you're doing. You're kind of doing this old-fashioned thing of saying, you know, I'm not going to sit around and wait for the government to do it. I'm not going to wait around for private organizations, church organizations and stuff. Say, no, I'm a businessman. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. And I'm going to help this guy out. And, you know, if it works, he can pay it forward.
Ben, when I moved to New York City, I started just managing a little shitty cell phone store in Penn Station. And literally the first person I met was the bum. He came in, he was a homeless guy, and he had a phone. And I couldn't believe there's this homeless guy who had a phone. Yeah. And he was always on it. It was like ridiculous to me. I couldn't, you know, started talking to him, and I ended up, hey, this guy's actually very intelligent. He never displayed any times being more insane than I am. He's not a drug addict, doesn't drink beer hardly. I was like, why is this guy homeless? We're going on. Bob, we probably need to play at least a song right now, right? I mean, tell me.
I mean, I guess if you want to, we could. I was enjoying the conversation.
I was, too. We can actually get right back into it as soon as we come back.
Well, we can, but I actually think Ben may be onto something. Maybe you should get as many homeless models as you can for all of your T-shirts. That could be your niche. You will have the homeless bum modeling.
Well, the problem, though, is that then if you do a bunch, each person gets less money, whereas if you focus on the one guy, plus it's good marketing because now people know, they feel safe. They're like, I know that guy. I bought that shirt that he's wearing, and by God, I see him wearing this new shirt. Maybe I'll get that shirt, too, because I know him.
Yeah, and when we send it to the person, it's not actually that shirt. You're not going to get homeless lice, guys, okay? No. It's actually a clean
shirt.
Well,
he's not homeless anymore.
That's not...
He's
fine.
Maybe you can do a calendar, Bobby. Maybe that's more.
Ooh, that's
that way
you know what? I like
one
that
per
idea,
month.
Bob. Noxious. That's a pretty good idea right there.
For sure, man. As far as, you know, bums, I once bought a T-shirt off of Merle from the Murder Junkies. It was the last T-shirt that he had, and I bought it off of his back. He's kind of like a bum.
Oh, my God. Merle Allen. That is awesome. Hey, you know what? Can I share an idea I had for a T-shirt?
Let's hear it. Lay it on me.
All right. B.B. Allen. A mashup with G.G. Allen and B.B. King.
It needs a little work.
A big, fat, naked B.B. King with the G.G. Allen tattoos.
Well, some people might find that disrespectful, but I don't know. Maybe that's what you're going for.
Too soon, Pickles.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Yeah. Disrespect, whatever. I might not make it. I just had the idea. If you have an idea for a T-shirt, go ahead and voice it, too.
I'd like to think that B.B. King's heirs would be able to make money off his merchandise. But no. You need money, too, Pickles. That's fine.
Did you hear about that? That his kids were saying that the AIDS possibly poisoned him?
Yeah, yeah. The AIDS?
Well, his,
the AIDS,
his
got
AIDS, AIDS, not the AIDS, like the disease.
He's got the AIDS. I got you.
Yeah, I read that. That's, you know, who knows? It seems lately with these celebrity situations, you know, there was that thing with Casey Kasem and his children were claiming that the wife
handlers
was abusing him. And, you know, it's like you get into a thing where a guy's got a lot of money and once his mental capacity is gone or he's in a coma or something, it's like a free-for-all with these people. Who knows what really happened? But yeah, when you start accusing people of murdering the guy, I don't know, I would hope you have some proof.
Yeah, he was 89 years old.
I think he died of being 89, most likely.
Yeah, he had it coming.
We've all got it coming.
That's for sure, man. Hey, let's play some music right here. We'll come back on the backside. This is brand new stuff from your band, Ben. This is from the Baby Fat record. This is God Damn You, which features my good friend, Chris Barrows. It's Dying Scene Radio.
The cool.
listening to Dying Scene Radio. God help you.
All these words mean nothing. Wasted breath and worthless lives. Trying to find something. A reason why we waste our time. Looking for the answers where there's nothing left to learn. How do we stop from getting burned?
The New York City melodic punk rock band called Dead on a Friday. They've officially released their new full album, and it's entitled Thanks for Nothing. Check it out here on DyingScene.com, and as well as their Oakland-based record label, VLE Records. Sounds a lot like Bad Religion to me, guys, but pretty cool. Bobby, kicking it over to you in the news department. What's happening?
Well, listen, the big news today, Bob, is that, honestly, it's that the new Screeching Weasel record just came out this week. The day I downloaded it, I listened to it 3 times in a row. And Ben, I know you've probably been up to your ears with media about this. I don't want to ask you things that you've already been over and over again. But I have to say, it's probably the most creative piece of punk rock I've heard in a very long time. Not much gets me excited, and I'm not just saying this to brown nose you because of the fact that you're guest hosting on the podcast this week. I genuinely love it and can't wait to read the libretto along with it on my fourth go around.
Well, I emailed you the libretto earlier, so
I will read that. Is the libretto going to be available for others to buy, or was it strictly for those who contributed to the crowdfunding campaign?
Well, it's a little confusing. It'll be with the physical copies, and I thought it was supposed to be with downloads. Like, I know the people who contributed to the fundraiser for it or the crowdfunding thing got one with theirs. They got like a PDF. But we also did for a stretch goal for the crowdfunding campaign, we did an annotated version of the libretto. So there's footnotes. I mean, I don't know how interesting it is, but just kind of references that people might otherwise not pick up on, things like that.
Absolutely. It's so cool to be able to,
So that's just for the crowdfunding people, but the actual libretto without the footnotes is available for everyone. And if they're not putting it, I've heard from a couple people that they didn't get one with iTunes, so I'll probably just have to have my design guy get me one I can throw up on the website as a PDF.
Ben, has there ever been a punk rock opera before, or is this the first one?
Not that I'm aware of. The term rock opera usually refers to stuff like, you know, it's a concept record. And this
Tommy, the
yeah,
Who, right?
That's right. And, you know, this is not a concept record. It's an actual opera. So, you know, with different people singing different roles and things. So, you know, we played God Damn You, which had Chris Barrow singing the role of a character named Zanoni, who in that song is very angry at my character, Tommy Swank, for having previously raped Zanoni's daughter and then went to court and convinced the court that she just had some regrets about a consensual sexual relationship. And so he's very angry about that. So, there's a whole plot line, and it's based on the Verdi opera Rigoletto. I don't know what else. I'm tired of talking about it at this point, not because I'm inundated. It's very kind of you to say I'm not inundated with media requests. Nobody wants to interview me, but because I've been talking about it a lot on my own podcast, and I did an interview with the Italian magazine Tempi where I, you know, really talked the whole thing out, and I think it came out well. My attitude is kind of like, yeah, you know, if you want to know about it, I don't know, go read the interview or something.
Yeah,
but buy
definitely.
The record, for God's sake, buy it.
Absolutely. Listen, you're right. Okay, so you can learn a lot from the Tempi interview. I think it did its job. I spent 2 hours watching Rigoletto, the Pavarotti version.
Sure.
Very interesting. I got a question for Bob, because I know Bob has 3 daughters. Now, Bob, listen, one of your daughters graduated from high school, right? So if you could imagine your daughter being older and her bringing home a boyfriend, and the boyfriend cheats on her, and in order to help her get through everything and to get back on this cheating guy, you hire a killer, and then the killer ends up killing your daughter instead. That's Rigoletto right there. It's insane. It's a great story.
More or less, although it's not explicitly, depending on what production you see, it's not always clear that the character actually rapes her. And she's still, in spite of that, still in love with him. And it's, you know, all those great operatic themes, passion, sex, murder. Somebody always has to die in the end, you know. Unless it's a comedy, somebody's going to die.
What are your thoughts on this crowdfunding, though? I mean, the internet removes the ability for musicians to make the type of money prevalent in the days prior to file sharing. But, hey, man, here's a positive aspect of the internet and a very viable avenue for getting one's creative project made.
I mean, all those things you said are absolutely true. But then you can multiply it by at least 2 or 3 by the fact that I don't play nice with others, and I am very much disliked by anybody who might be in a position with a record label to fund something like that. So yeah, I mean, it's absolutely huge for me to be able to go to the fans and say, hey, if you want to hear a record, I mean, it's got to be paid for. So the interesting thing to me about it, I thought it was great, and I thought it was going to be a chore, but I actually really enjoyed it. And it was a lot of fun. And the next time I do one, I was coming up with ideas about things I want to do next time and different ways to approach it to make it more fun for me and also for the fans. But one of the things that really fascinates me about crowdfunding, in fact, the thing that fascinates me about it the most, is how utterly rejected and despised and loathed it is by the very people who ought to be embracing it, by punk rock musicians. You're just laughed at and mocked and reviled if you crowdfund. And it's like, guys, you know, you're the ones who claim to be waving this DIY flag. This is the ultimate DIY. Because essentially, a crowdfunding thing is just a glorified pre-order. The people who criticize it will say, oh, you're begging for money. It's like, well, not any more than when you put a CD out or an LP and you're offering it up for sale. All you're doing is selling it in advance. So you throw in some shinier trinkets or cool things for more money, but really you're just doing a pre-order. But yeah, I mean, they just hate it. It's this obsession with trying to hold on to a way that doesn't exist anymore. It's like, no, you should get a label to put it out. It's like, guys, the labels don't have any money anymore. If we're going to rely on nothing except record labels putting out records by unknown bands, nobody's going to get their records put out anymore. And it's just funny to me how characteristic it is of punk rock and how, you know, I've been listening to punk and involved in it for over 30 years. And it never changes that if there's an opportunity to shoot yourself in the foot, the punk rockers will do it every time. They will always take the wrong road. They will always do the least beneficial thing for them. And they'll do it purportedly based on principle, but really just on this kind of blind allegiance to what has come before and what you're quote unquote supposed to do or whatever. So that was really fascinating to me, was that I just took a lot of shit for doing it. It's like, hey man, all I know is I got a non-recoupable advance to make the record the way I needed to make it. And I made a record that I'm very happy with, that so far the fans seem to like. And the people who are earning a royalty on it will actually earn a proper royalty, because that money doesn't have to be recouped. It's one of the situations where everybody wins, and yet the finger waggers are always out there, aren't they? Anyway, I'm sorry I went on too long. If this was my podcast, that would be appropriate, but it's your guys' show, so I apologize.
We have a tendency to ramble and carry on, so it's quite all right, man. We'll break format and just proceed.
I think the listeners would much rather hear Ben Weasel ramble than us, because we do it all the time. We constantly do that.
Yeah, I do the same thing on my podcast, too. I just ramble, but I do it on purpose, because I kind of do it to irritate my co-host. I don't think he really realizes it, but I do. He's a radio guy, like a professional radio guy, and he'll sit down and he'll be like, okay, and just kind of briefly go over what we're going to do. And immediately out of the gate, every time, I very deliberately and intentionally will
take over,
derail him.
Well, I'll just do things that we didn't talk about, and I'll start talking about something. You'd be like, well, Ben, you talked about you wanted to tell a story before we start, and I say, like last time, and I said, yeah, but before we do that, I want to talk about this other thing. And I deliberately do it in a way that makes me seem absent-minded or something, but I'm devious about it. I just like making things hard for him.
It's a weird thing, though. You have to basically prepare enough so that you could be stream of consciousness, too. You got to kind of just be able to do both things and jump in and out of it.
That's a very good point, yes.
Let's play some, if it's okay, Bob, you're the music director. What do you think?
Absolutely, man. Let's play some music right here. Ben, from up there in your neck of the woods, the Copyrights. Have you heard of these guys?
Yeah, they're complete douchebags.
And
their music is just, it's not even interesting enough to be bad. It's just so relentlessly mediocre. But yeah, those guys are just typical pop punk, can and do dish it out, but my God, they can't take it. Holy cow. God forbid you should push back, because these guys will cry and cry.
This is the brand new song right here called Slider. The Copyrights on Dying Scene Radio. Joe from the Queers, you're listening to Dying Scene Radio.
All of the kids are so angry. They push each other around. It doesn't matter the music. It doesn't matter the sound. They want to call it a community. They want to call it a day. They want to say they're in unity. So what the fuck do they act on me? Hey, when you head off to the show, you better guess, you better know. Insecurities, our neuroses, our inhibitions. You gotta get them out. You gotta find a place where I can feel safe. And all of them are drenched, just to punch them in the face. And when you head off to the show,
that was was the ska punk veterans, the AOKs, doing their brand new track called Thrash Skank Thrash. Some of that, you know, ska punkish stuff. Ben, what do you think about the ska punk music? Is that up your alley or is it more left field?
I was sincerely completely unaware that it still existed. I thought it had died out sometime in the early 90s. And good riddance to it indeed, I said back then. So, but I guess it's like a reanimated corpse. It's back to annoy.
Music has a way of regenerating itself about every 20 years or so. So your 90s reference would be correct. And I think what it is, Ben, is that we try to, I for one don't like every single song that we play, but we try to appease the masses, if you will, and play a little bit of something for everybody.
That's fine. Because that's, if we just wanted to hear. I mean, I'm not, hey, don't go by me. I like to piss on the masses' parade. I mean, that's why I am who I am and do what I do. That's why, you know, if your listeners are wondering, well, why would he call some nobody band I've never heard of a bunch of douchebags? Well, because they are, and because I can. Because I don't care. I think this is the thing a lot of people miss, and it's one of the things that really I think gotten obnoxious in punk and has made the music so bad is that there's nobody left who doesn't give a fuck. The only people who don't give a fuck are the people who can afford to not give a fuck, which is almost always the people nobody's heard of. But I mean, a band that has any name for themselves, I mean, everybody's just scared to death of offending anybody or, you know, we're always out there. I've done it too. God help me. We're always out there apologizing for having said something that offended somebody. I mean, we're like, we act like we're Hollywood celebrities or something. It's like, you know, fuck you, man. I'm doing this not for any political reasons or anything like this. I'm doing this because I was a maladjusted, fucked up kid. And I was a delinquent and a degenerate teenager. And I didn't fit in anywhere. And I was a fucking mess. And I have to ask myself sometimes, how did I get to the point of being in my mid-40s and being taunted by a fat guy in his mid-40s, Fat Mike from NoFX, for being quote-unquote weird? I was like, are you shitting me? Of course I'm weird, you dumb fucker. I'm a singer in a punk band. What the fuck do you expect me to be?
Absolutely, man. I mean, yeah.
I'm weird. I don't get along well with others. I don't like other people in the music scene very much. I don't suffer fools gladly. Well, I don't suffer them at all. And those used to be virtues in punk. And now apparently kissing ass and slapping backs and shaking hands and networking is the way it's done. And I mean, a band like mine wouldn't have a chance if we were starting today. We're lucky that we made a name for ourselves and we can do okay now, because if we were starting out today, we'd be fucked. We'd never get out of the garage.
Well, Ben, those are virtues, and I can speak for both Bob and I that we are virtuous, that you're still hanging on there with us, and you haven't, what was it? You don't suffer fools?
Yeah, that's right.
You haven't realized that we're complete fools and...
you maybe. You know what? Can I derail the conversation for a second? Because I forgot. I wanted to ask you... I don't really know what Dying Scene is. Is that your thing? Is that your website?
Oh my God, Dying Scene. Well, we got to be... you know what? Let's...
I'm sorry. I know what it is, but I don't know if it's a bunch of people running it or... You know what I mean? I don't know whose it is, I guess.
It's a living organism, I guess you could say. It's a bunch of different writers all over the USA. We do have a head honcho. Our guy, Johnny X, he's the head editor, I guess. 36-year-old entrepreneur. Like-minded fellow, a guy who just loves punk rock, just like me. And me and Bob here, we do the Dying Scene Radio podcast.
So
and
is it run by a corporation like Punk News?
No. At this point, it's really a grassroots effort. Is that good or bad? I mean, this is...
I have no problem. You know, you say the word corporation and people freak out. I'm incorporated.
No, you know, absolutely. You know what?
I don't have a problem with corporations. When people say that, I think what they mean is big corporations are evil, and I can kind of understand that, but like, you know, at what point do you decide something's too big? It's just, so no, I have no problem with that. I just thought it was funny with Punk News because they built that entire site on reader contributions, and then somebody came along with a bag of money and they took it all for themselves. Like,
what?
Fuck you.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, I mean, to this day, I think most of their content is generated by, I shouldn't say most of it. Most of it used to be. At this point, I think quite a lot of it is still generated by readers. And, you know, obviously they're unpaid. They just submit news items. So yeah, they built up the site that way and then they were bought out and people were like, what the fuck? And the owner
the owner just wouldn't. He just went into hiding. He wouldn't. He like got his bags of money and wouldn't talk about anything and wouldn't address all the people who were kind of pissed that they had worked to build this thing that he then profited from and didn't bother sharing any of the money.
On that note, let's regurgitate some press clippings really quick here. Let's do it because we do it for free, for the love of it. And, you know, somebody's going to probably take over our podcast soon, Bob. Let's stick to the program here. New EP alert from London, Ontario, Pizza Punkers, Wasted Potential. Nervous Sessions, which is the name of the new record, will be digitally released on June 1st with a pre-order for a cassette version released through Get Party Records and Kurt Murder Fan Club, limited to 50 copies. Give Nervous Conditions a listen on DyingScene.com. Hey, Ben, what do you think about cassette tapes making a comeback right now? Is that even a possibility? I had that Rigoletto. I found my grandfather's Rigoletto.
Yeah, you sent the photo, yeah.
The three cassette tape. I couldn't find a cassette player to save my life.
Yeah.
I had to view it on the internet. What do you think about the cassette tape thing?
I mean, you know, if people want to buy them, I'll sell them to them. But, you know, I think what happens is you get, and it happened with vinyl as well. I think you get people who are nostalgic for a time they're too young to remember, because if you were around when cassettes were around, then you know that cassettes suck and they're terrible. The art is small. You can't easily fast forward to the next track, just everything about it. So I think it's pretty dumb, but there's a part of it that I kind of get as a songwriter that I really appreciate, which is that you put the thing in and you're pretty much committed to it. You know, you've got two sides to it and you put it in and you've got to listen to the damn album. You can't just sit there and say, like I do if I'm listening to new music, you can't just sit there and say, yeah, I'm listening to a digital file, so I'm going to listen to 3 seconds, and if it doesn't blow me away, I'm going to turn it off. So I think that there's something kind of sweet about it in a way with younger people who recognize, I mean, I think it stems from this recognition that something has gone terribly wrong in how we perceive and listen to music. It started with file sharing, but now the big problem is streaming. When everything is so easily accessible, when you don't have to hunt down like I did when I was a kid, you have to hunt down your favorite records. You would have to order your records sometimes from these godforsaken places in, you know, like Europe. And you don't have to do that anymore. And that's great in most ways, but there's something, familiarity breeds contempt might have a corollary to this or something, because there's something where it all becomes so easy that you become jaded. You know, when I was younger and I would go out on tour, you always knew that your best shows tended to be in the towns or the cities that weren't getting the most shows. Like, you knew if you went to San Francisco, that was a jaded crowd. If you went to DC was notoriously, they would just stand there, arms folded, and look at you. But if you'd go to some of these places that maybe weren't as cool, like Houston, Texas, we would have great shows there, Philadelphia, and the smaller towns, because the people weren't jaded. They really appreciated that you were there and making the effort and coming to their town, you know, especially some of these small towns where a lot of bands didn't go. So I think it's a similar kind of thing. I think that maybe the cassette people are kind of pining for those days. And that part of it I get. The format sucks, but I get the part of pining for the time when, if you bought a record, it was an investment and you had to sit down and listen to it. And by God, if you didn't like it, you'd listen to it again and try to like it. You'd try to find something worthwhile about it. And that was a crucial part of me becoming a songwriter, was listening to music in that way. I didn't buy a record and just kind of blah and then go on to the next thing. Like, I invested time into it. So
I think even with CDs, it was like that too, though. It was just like anything other than file sharing.
When you you're right. You know? I mean, because it didn't, you're right, because the CD was huge in the 90s, but it didn't really change until the early 21st century when file sharing became a thing.
Right.
I think with cassettes, you just listen to the whole thing because, like Ben said earlier, it's hard to fast forward or rewind, so you just tend to listen to it from front to back.
Hell yeah. Another press clipping, Ben. I know it's what we have to do, man.
I don't care. I'm a guest. I'm not going to criticize. Well, I probably am going to criticize if I think it's funny, but
he's going to have opinions on this. Yeah, I want to hear Ben's opinions.
That's right, Bob. I just want to be able to interject, Pickles. That's all.
Okay, let's go. Austin street punk act Sniper 66 have released a new music video ahead of their sets at Punk Rock Bowling and subsequent West Coast Midwest tour. The tune is called Warrior's Way, and it will appear on an upcoming 7-inch split with the Potato Pirates. Check out the tour dates and the video and all its Nazi killing glory on DyingScene.com. Bob, it's like a punk rock version of Inglourious Basterds. Ben, what's on the front as far as music videos, man? Are there any plans in the works for a feature film or anything? I mean, because I don't think it could be a stretch to see that incorporated. I mean, for real. Something like the Pavarotti thing?
You're talking about the baby fat thing. No. Well, first of all, let's back up for a second because I wanted to say you mentioned the Potato Pirates. We played a couple shows with them in February. And I don't stay at the venue after we sound check. I don't show up till like 20 minutes before we play, but I heard them sound checking down in Dallas, and they were really good. I hadn't heard them, actually. My agent wanted to put them on the bill, and I was like, yeah, that's fine if they're not, you know, pain in the ass scenesters, and I don't have to read about what kind of food was in our green room and what rock stars we are on the internet the next day, then fine, put them on the bill. But yeah, they were actually pretty good. I was pleasantly surprised. But yeah, no, there's nothing in the pipeline. I got an email from a guy with a theater in New York who wants to do Baby Fat on stage, but I've been busy and I haven't written him back. And my agent / manager, I don't know what he is. He's a booking agent, but he acts as my manager, but he doesn't take 15%. So I don't want to question any of it because I don't want to pay him 15%. So I think he was going to get in touch with the guy. But I don't know if he did because we're kind of disorganized around here. But I, you know, if somebody wants to do it and they can raise money to do it in a good way, and if I don't have to be involved in it in an onstage way, then I'm all ears. But Fat Mike did his thing, and I think his thing was like he sat down and decided he wanted to do this thing, and it was always intended to be a musical to be on stage, and he got funding and, I don't know, found a producer or whatever, and I was just trying to make a record. I never had any intention to do anything more with it, but if somebody wants to, sure, send a few bags of money my way.
I was going to ask you a couple questions, but you kind of just answered all of them just now.
Okay,
you just
good.
Went into all of them, covered them all.
Okay, yeah, that if you talk long enough, eventually you'll say everything.
You will. Bob, what do you think about music, man?
I think I was on that same brain path as you, Bobby, because I had some Sniper 66 lined up right here. This is a brand new song that they have that they actually debuted over there at Punk Rock Bowling. So it's called Warrior's Way, like you said. So here's the song. Bam. Dying Scene Radio.
Everything that they believe is wrong. So come and look. the Ripper representing the Dwarves, and you're tuned to the sounds of Dying Scene Radio.
Jacksonville, Florida-based punk rockers called Head Creeps, who have just released a new EP called Calling All Creeps on Life to Live Records. The whole thing's streaming right here on DyingScene.com, and check it out. Head Creeps, come on in. So, Ben, I got a question for you. Chris Barrows is on your new record. He's a good friend of mine, and he's here locally for me, and known that guy forever. How did you and Chris get acquainted?
Chris is my oldest friend, not that he's the oldest one, but I've known him longer than anybody in music.
He's actually my oldest friend, as in age-wise.
Ba-dum-bum. Go ahead, man. I'm sorry to cut you off.
I'll say this. He looks younger than me, so whatever he's doing it right. But our demo tapes were reviewed in the same issue of Maximum Rock and Roll when both bands were starting out, and we wrote him or he wrote us or something, but we kind of became pen pals, and I don't know. I mean, we've been pals ever since. Chris is a great guy. He's one of my favorite people in music. He's a great, and unfortunately not well-known as he should be, but he's a great frontman. And when he really gets going, he is probably the only person I've played a show with where I kind of wanted to stay away from the stage a little bit when he was up there because, you know, you just don't know what's going to happen sometimes. Things get violent. And sometimes there's fire.
Have you heard his new record, Human Being?
I have. And it's great. I mean, he's always, you know, Chris has always written great songs, and he's got what I think of as an old school kind of punk voice where he can sing and he can belt it out, but it's just the kind of thing where you would never, you know, a lot of bands, and I like a lot of them, but a lot of bands now, the singers are really kind of technically good and polished, but he's just got that raw, like you used to hear with, you know, old Black Flag and the Circle Jerks and stuff like that. He's just got that raw kind of vocal that is never going to fly in any other genre of music, you know. Absolutely. And I knew when I wrote that song, I knew that I wanted him for it. I kind of got caught up with other things. And so by the time I needed him to sing it, I was kind of stuck with the key that it had to be sung in. But he went in and pulled it off. He belted it out, and I think it sounds great. He's one of my favorite people. Played a lot of shows with his bands, and Pink Lincoln's obviously being the best known of them. But he's still out there doing it and not giving a shit, and I love it.
That's for sure. You know, I actually played guitar on that record, his new record.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, look at that. Small world.
Small world.
I have a vocal on it. I don't sing a whole song, but like I sing a few lines on one of the songs.
I remember. Yeah. That's right.
So,
hey, speaking of Bob playing music, Bob, didn't you just come back from a little mini tour? You were in, where'd you go down to just over the Memorial Day weekend? You went to...
New Orleans, Houston, and Austin.
That's right. And how did that fly? We were talking about that in the last episode.
We barely missed the floods in Houston, and we were glad to be out of there pronto. It was a good time, man. We had a great run of shows, just a couple, you know, weekend days.
This is with your band. What's your band called?
My band is called Pigpen.
That's not a bad name. I'm always prepared to criticize it. I think most bands have terrible names. That's actually not a bad, I can't really argue with that name.
Ben, can I just tell you, they all don ski masks with protruding pig noses.
Yeah.
It's a nice little shtick he's got going.
See, I mean, you couldn't get me down in places like New Orleans and Houston wearing a ski mask. I mean, the humidity, oh man, I couldn't do it. And you're on stage and you're sweating anyway, but then the humidity down there, forget it.
You kind of get used to it. And, you know, I live here in Florida and it's humid and... Come August, it's hot as hell, but you know what? For the shtick, we keep it on. I haven't died yet, so.
Hey, Bob, how about some news?
Fire away.
All right. Crossover thrash legends MOD has announced that they have split up for the third time in their career and canceled their plans to tour later this year. The reason they are splitting up is because frontman Billy Milano chose not to release any MOD albums or take the band on tour again in order to concentrate on his private life. The band explains that, as true and dedicated musicians that we are, MOD was one of our huge inspirations, and by a lucky shot we got in the band for any great good reason that a light shined our way. That was MOD. We apologize to the fans, to everyone who's been waiting for us on the road. Billy has denied MOD, and without MOD we can't go on. We wish Billy our gratitude for all our great times we spent with the band. We look forward down the road for bigger and better things. We wish Billy the best. Sign the band. I just thought this was interesting, Ben, because I'm not aware of the entire story. Does that sound to you like MOD's kind of like performing a coup against their founding member?
You know, you can never tell. I'll tell you something. I went through my thing. The thing people need to understand when they read this stuff on Punk News or Dying Scene or any of these sites, you should automatically be suspicious when a band puts out a statement. Because there's no real reason to do it. Like, they act like, oh, well, people want to know and blah, blah, blah. There's no real reason to do it except, like, political interband reasons, okay? So if somebody does that, because it happened to me 4 years ago, I punched a couple of ladies, and...
A couple of them?
Yeah, well, I was on a roll.
Okay.
You know, it's like potato chips. You can't stop with just one.
One stop, can't pop.
And I joke about it like that because it was just completely, you know, presented without context, and the villagers were out with the pitchforks and the torches and so forth. But right after that happened, I mean, I stepped off stage and, you know, it was business as usual backstage and nobody was bothered. But then the internet got hold of it and all of a sudden my guys were singing a different tune and they put out a press release. You know, they put out the press release saying that they could not, for the time being, play any shows. They couldn't muster up the dignity to play. Because, you know, it takes a lot of dignity to get up on stage and play Ginny's Got a Problem with Her Uterus and I Wanna Fuck. I mean, you can't just get up there like a fool and play Holy Hardcore and I Wanna Be a Homosexual. It's just not, you know.
So when did you become a Catholic?
But my point is, I'm sorry, let me get to my point because I'll ramble forever if given the chance.
Okay.
My point is... that there was all this stuff going on behind the scenes, which of course nobody knew about. Like, they put out this press release and it was reported on, it all started with Punk News, it was reported as the guys quit the band, which they didn't, because behind the scenes they're like, well, this is the way things have to be from now on. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? This is my band, you're not telling me how things are gonna be. But my point is, the whole thing was very obviously, and Owen Murphy, who was helping me out at the time with management, you know, had the same opinion. It was the drummer, because the drummer had always been like, he wanted more money, he wanted to get cut in on the merch. And I was like, dude, I told you what I'm paying you, and you ain't getting a raise unless I start making, you know, more money. But I'm not taking a pay cut to give you more money, and you're never getting a cut of the merch. So he saw this as an opportunity. So he got the other guys together. I mean, he was the one who wrote the press release. He was the one who got the guys together, told them, don't talk to me. It was a power play. I mean, really, when you strip all this away, it was my idiot drummer trying to get himself more money and trying to get more control and power in the band. And of course, all it got, I fired him. I fired all of them. But, you know, you when you see those kind of things, you got to, you know, take it with a grain of salt because you're not hearing the whole story. And you know what? The whole story isn't very interesting. It's just a bunch of people arguing.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I was going to cite that they have previously broke up on a couple of different occasions, but you know what? You're right. It's not that interesting. They're just fighting. Who gives a shit? Let's move on. If you're into hardcore bands like Sheer Terror, The Casualties, Death Cycle, Dissonil.
What kind of bands are these? What's the genre?
They're
called?
Hardcore bands.
Okay.
Hardcore punk rock. And anyway, another band called Concrete Cross. Then we've got a tasty new band for you to check out. The band's called Sonic Poison. It contains members of all the aforementioned bands. And on June 22nd, they'll be releasing their self-titled debut through Lifeline Records. Find the link to the pre-order on DyingScene.com. You can stream the release's first single, Another Day of Misery, on the aforementioned site as well. Ben, what are your thoughts on supergroups?
It's one of those things that probably always sounds better in theory or on paper than it works out in practice, isn't it? Because, you know, if you're going to have a proper super group, then you've got to get the best guys from each band, like the best, not just the best players, but the best creative guys. But we're all egomaniacs, those of us who are the good songwriters and stuff. And so you get a bunch of egomaniacs into a room and you've got all kinds of problems. And one of the things that I suspect happens is you're sitting there and you're going, I'll be fucked if I'm giving my best songs to these guys. So you kind of maybe don't put your absolute top shelf stuff out there. That's my guess. I don't know. But I mean, it's a kind of thing if people want to do it. You know what those guys did with Flag? There was Black Flag and then there was Flag. And I saw some video of a show they played in New York at... It's the place we played last time. I can't remember the name of it, but it's some theater. It's like 1,000, 1,200 capacity. I don't know. Anyway,
Webster Hall,
not Webster Hall. We're playing there in July with the Queers and MTX.
I'll definitely be at that show, man.
Good. Yeah. Talk to our guy, Tom, and we'll put you on the list and everything. But anyway, so I saw a video of that and they were phenomenal. I mean, they were really good. You know, Keith Morris from the Circle Jerks. It was all, except for Stefan Egerton, the guitar player, it was all people who had been in Black Flag at various points, but they were, it was the kind of thing that to my mind looked terrible on paper, but they were phenomenal. They were outstanding. So it can work, I guess.
What are some of the bands that you like in music these days other than Off?
I've never heard Off. Are you talking to Pickles or me?
Actually, I assumed that you were talking about Keith Morris. I assumed you were talking about
No, I was talking about Flag. It was basically, you know, like a Black Flag cover band by people who had been in Black Flag.
That's right. And I forgot about that. My mistake.
Yeah. You know, as far as current band, none of them. I mean, I like the Queers. I like the Manges from Italy. Everybody else can go to hell. I don't care.
I'm going
to
check out the Manges.
I don't listen to it. I don't have patience for it. I like Taylor Swift. You know, if she counts, then fine.
Do you have daughters, Ben?
Yeah. Yeah, they love Taylor Swift, so I love Taylor Swift. You know, I like the songs from Frozen, too. I mean, that's what I listen to. I'm not listening to this punk rock stuff. But let me ask you guys, I got a couple questions for you. Two questions, and whoever wants to field them can. One, you're talking a lot of news about these different bands, and it's on such and such record label. I know what a record label does for me, but what does a record label do for a young band or not very well-known band these days? That's question one. And question two is, because you're talking about all these bands I've never heard of, and I don't know how popular they are or aren't, but with all these bands coming out, like, what is their motivation for doing it at a time when there's no money to be made and there's even less of a chance of getting any notoriety than there was 25 years ago? And don't tell me it's just, like, it's fun. Yeah, it's fun. And don't tell me it's because they love it. Yeah, you know, we all love it. That's a given. But, like, why are they actually spending their own money? What are they getting
out? You know, I have a thought about that. I mean, it's just like how the newspaper died and now everything's digital. It's like this whole thing, man, we're going through this growing pain time right now where we're trying to, it's like the old West. We're trying to figure out how it's going to be. You know, there's all this new freedom. You know, we talked about it before with the crowdfunding. You can get things done. There's a lot of good things that come with the internet. They're going to figure out ways to monetize, and you just have to get out there and do it, or you're not going to figure it out. You know, what would you do if you were coming out right now? I mean, you'd still have some kind of driving force to be creative and get your art out there. I know you would, you know, and you would try to figure out what's the proper way that where I can make some money here.
But the thing is, back in the 80s, there were certainly a large percentage of people in punk who didn't find my act funny, and who didn't find much of anything funny. But there were always people who kind of pulled for the underdog and kind of liked that attitude we have. And the thing that I would worry about if I was starting today was it would be, I think that my attitude would prevent me from not only from succeeding, but from even getting out of the gate in the first place. I mean, I think you have to be much more political, much more of a glad hander than you used to have to, because we didn't do any of the things that bands regularly do today. We didn't even try to get on bills supporting other bands. We headlined all our shows. I think we opened once. We had a show and then they wanted to add all, so we opened for all, and it was like 75 people at a VFW hall in Moline, Illinois. So it wasn't like some big show. And other than that, I mean, the only other band you could say we opened for was Operation Ivy in Berkeley at Gilman Street. But that was more like they were pals, and when they came to our town, we did a show for them. And when we came to their town, they played a show with us. And it wasn't really opening for somebody, even though they were hugely popular, at least for those days.
Well, Ben, speaking of, you know, Operation Ivy, if I could go into another little press clipping here of...
Please do.
Have you heard of this YouTube channel, Noisy? They do all these documentaries about different musical genres and stuff. It's actually pretty interesting.
Is it from Vice Magazine?
No, it's not Vice. It's called Noisy. They're good, though. It's kind of like a similar thing, but with music. Do you like documentaries? I'm like a crazy documentary head.
Yeah, I used to, till everybody and their mother started putting them out. I mean, God,
You're a contrarian, Ben. You're a classic contrarian.
No, I really like documentaries, but it's like there's so many of them now. I saw the other day there's a documentary on Paul Williams. It's like, for the love of God, we do not need a documentary on Paul Williams.
Yes, we do.
No, we don't. Nobody does. Paul Williams was one of those faces, if you grew up in the 70s like I did, it was one of those faces that you saw once and never wanted to see again.
Was he that piano guy? The guy he played, what was his song?
He wrote just the schmaltziest, like he wrote the Rainbow Connection for Kermit the Frog. And
that's it. I saw him. That was my first concert. I was probably 7 years old at Walt Disney World.
Yeah, he's also right now the outgoing president of ASCAP.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. He's actually, I think ASCAP is a mess, but since he took over, it's been a little bit less of a mess. So I think he's done a pretty good job. But yeah. So yes, I do like documentaries, though, to answer your question.
I just had a little picture of Bob 7 years old at Disney World with that going on. That's funny.
Did it scar you for life?
A little bit, yeah.
I still remember it to this day.
Listen, before we go too far, can you guys tell me, maybe Bob Noxious can tell me, because you guys work with record labels all the time. What good does a record label... I'll tell you one thing. If I were starting out now, I would not even try to sign with a record label. Like, I don't get that at all. I mean, my label, Recess Records, does specific things for us, and it's because I don't have time to do it myself and blah, blah, blah. But what is a young band getting out of a record label except, like, giving up a cut of their money?
I tell you what I get is a email box full of press releases.
Yeah.
That's about it, man. I'm in an independent band. I don't have a label. I've been signed to a label or with distribution through Universal, and it was the biggest ripoff of my life. So I am proudly, myself as a musician, independent, unsigned, and I use Bandcamp.
Yeah.
And to me, I think Bandcamp is the way to go. We have digital copies. If we're on the road, we have CDs and t-shirts. You know, obviously, got to make our money somehow. It's in merch.
I was looking at, okay, if I was starting out today, that's exactly right. I would say I got Bandcamp. I got all these other digital outlets. And, you know, when I go out on the road or whatever for mail order, I can press up my own records. And I don't need a label. I don't need somebody taking all that money. I can send out my own press releases. The funny thing is, I was talking with a friend about this the other day, that band Pears from New Orleans. Terrible. I don't know if you guys have heard them. They're just awful.
Bob interviewed them a couple weeks ago.
I just spoke with them.
Yeah. I'm sure they're very nice gentlemen, but I mean, they're just kind of like a bunch of guys got together in suits and ties in a room with pie charts and stuff and tried to figure out, okay, what could we take from current hip, cool guy punk? And we'll take elements of the Dillinger Four here and, you know, this band over here, and we'll put them all together and then make something that everybody's going to like and blah, blah, blah. So that's what it sounds like to me. But I saw they had signed to Fat Records, and I'm like, you know, what that makes me think of is back in the 80s and 90s when punk rock bands would sign to major labels. And it's like, that's it. You just rolled the dice. It's a complete crapshoot because either you're going to hit it big, which happened like twice with Green Day and The Offspring, or you're going to crap out and your band's over. And that is what a label like Epitaph or Fat Records has become, because Fat Mike is not your friend. I know you like buddy around with him and that, you know, and he signs you the label and everything. If you're not making money, you're not going to last for more than a couple of records. And so if you don't go to Fat with the intention of then we're going to move to a bigger label, like a major label, then you have to be satisfied with being at that level of being on Fat as like the best you can do, or you end up getting kicked off the label. And just like it used to be, if you got booted from a major label, the indie people didn't want you back. And it's the same thing now. I can't think of a band that's been dropped from Fat that continued to have anything resembling a career. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's funny. It's like those labels like Fat and Epitaph have really become the major labels in this new world order. And to me, it just doesn't make sense. Like, what does Fat do? You know what Fat has going for it? They've got good distribution, but so do a lot of labels. And they've got a publicist who used to be on staff in-house. Now she's technically independent. But they've got a publicist that everybody knows. You guys know her. The magazines all know her. So they'll all print whatever she sends them. And that's useful, but a publicist isn't that expensive. I mean, it costs some money, but if you really want that, you can pay somebody to do that for you. So I don't get it. I don't get the point of it. But
is Bobby Faite based on Fat Mike?
No.
No, that it just happens to be.
No, but gosh, I hope Fat Mike thinks so. I mean, the reason we got dropped from Fat Records was because Fat Mike became convinced that the first song on the record was about him and remains apparently convinced to this day. And the funny thing about it was we sent them a 5-song demo. And that song was on the demo, and we sent them the lyrics. And the lyrics didn't change at all for that song. They changed for another song, but the song he was upset about, we didn't change a word of those lyrics. And he signed us based on that demo. And I'm like, how can you, like, if the song was about you, which it wasn't, but if that was about you, like, why would you sign? And what happened was, it's just he can't admit. What happened was, a couple of these, you know, scumbag scenester friends of his got in his ear and said, hey, man, he's clowning you. You should be pissed. And he's like, yeah, I'm pissed. He's like, yeah, you're denying it, but you know it's true. It's like, then you don't know me, because if it was true, I would be taking out ads about it. I would be trumpeting it. I would not be denying it. I would be embracing it. I would be saying, I just pulled off the greatest fuck you in the history of punk rock. I mean, I'm the last guy in the world who would ever deny having... I wish I was that diabolical. But, you know, cocaine is a hell of a drug. I guess the guy's just paranoid or...
What song are you talking
about? Very, very thin-skinned.
One of the songs off Baby Fat, the one that's talking about him having a girlfriend or something like that? That's not the one, yeah. Right?
No, it wasn't a song off Baby Fat.
Okay.
No,
okay.
No. Baby Fat just came out. I mean, this is a song off the last Screeching Weasel full-length First World Manifesto on Fat Records. There's a song called Follow Your Leaders, and it's a song about, roughly speaking, about three different type of just punk rock scumbag scenesters. And it's just these kind of stereotypes of punk. So Mike saw this and apparently thinks of himself as a stereotype. I really liked NoFX when I first heard them, which would have been around 88 or 89. Actually, when I first heard them, I thought they sucked, because they did suck. But
So apparently the producer has tapped on the glass here in the studio. Says we got to play some music. So what I have here is some garage punk from Istanbul, Turkey, which immediately makes me feel suspect. But I'm always curious as to what other music sounds like. They got a self-titled album. You can listen to it right here on DyingScene.com. This song is called Anaphylactic Shock, and the band is called Haken. Haken? I have no idea. It's Dying Scene Radio. Never said that coming's wrong. Saw you playing at the door. Because an anaphylactic shock. I fell down on the ground with my body upside down. Because an anaphylactic shock. Can you really shake it in love? With your fucking legs like so.
Listen to Dying Scene Radio. This is Paris. Rock on.
Wasted Potential. You talked about them earlier, and I figured I'd go ahead and throw them on as well. I kind of dig a band that likes pizza, and it seems that they have a very fond taste for pizza. If you look at all their albums, buddy, they got nothing but pizza and dripping cheese.
What is
pepperoni.
That? They're called Pizza Punk, Bob?
Pizza Punk. Anyway, but the song was called Cum Lords.
Oh, there we go. There's a little take. Slum Lords.
No, Cum. C-U-M.
Oh, I got it.
How would you like that on your pizza?
I would not enjoy that on my pizza, despite my name, Pickles.
Well, it's getting released through Get Party Records and the Kurt Murder Fan Club. You talked about that earlier. Pick it up June 1st. That was it right there. Double shot of news.
Nice.
Let's talk about that NOFX.
Oh, yeah, we were talking about NOFX a little bit. You know, Ben, just to get back into it, I love NOFX too, man. I mean, I get a bit. By the way, can I just tell you a quick story about Screeching Weasel, man?
Please do.
I've been a Screeching Weasel fan since I was a little kid, okay? I've been listening to you guys forever. I actually, before I had any tattoos, my first tattoo, I went to a tattoo parlor in Florida, and I'm 35 now. I must have been 15 years old, Ben. I wanted to get a Screeching Weasel logo, and the guy said, "Come back when your balls drop." Now, I don't know if that was, I don't know if it was good that happened. I don't have that tattooed on my body right now, but I did want to share that with you. I did at one point think about, or actually, you know, entertain.
I always said I wouldn't do it, but I got it tattooed on me last year. not just the head, but the art that we use for our backdrop and that was used for the reissue of How to Make Enemies. It's kind of a Frankenstein weasel. So yeah, a lot of people have that tattoo. It's awesome. It's very cool.
I love it. How did you come up with the logo, Ben, and stuff?
You know, I can't remember if we were talking about this on my podcast the other day or not, but I was talking with somebody. It might have been just a friend of mine was hanging out, but I was just talking about that the other day because it was from our second record, Boogada Boogada Boogada, and we, there was this guy that hung around at the coffee shop where our guitarist worked, and he did these sculptures, and he was doing this series of sculptures of... It was like a relief. What do you call it when they do the like the gargoyles on the buildings and stuff like that? Is that called a relief?
I don't know.
Okay, we're all idiots. But anyway,
I'm Owen Murphy on this one. I don't have anything to contribute.
Okay, so it was like half a skull. It was in a frame. So there's like this frame that's like, I don't know, 3 or 4 inches deep, like a frame for a photo, except it's deep and there's a sculpture in it. So it's like half a skull. I mean, like the front half of a skull. So he did this series of all these things, and there was one that he had where there were all these worms coming out of the skull's mouth. And I knew what I wanted to call the record, so he said, oh, that would be a good thing for the cover of the record. And we asked him if we could use it, and he said, yeah. So we tried it. This is long before digital cameras. This is 1988. So we tried really hard, having no photography skills whatsoever, to get a good photo of it, and we just couldn't. Between the lighting and the angles and everything, we just could not. We had this great idea for this record cover, and now we're stuck, and we needed to move. So the guy who had done the first record drew this weasel head, and it was just kind of like, yeah, I guess that's okay. We'll slap it up there. And I said, let's just blow it up and put it up there. No band name or anything. Just put it up there on the record in black and pink. And, you know, it became... this kind of semi-iconic thing, which was really kind of cool.
Hell yeah. You were talking about NoFX before.
The thing about NoFX, when they started, they were like Screeching Weasel. When they started, they sucked. They were just awful. And all I ever knew of them was their version of Black Sabbath's Iron Man, which was just excruciating. But then in 88 or 89, they came out with the album S&M Airlines on Epitaph, and they had gotten good. And my drummer and I at the time loved that album. We were out on tour when we heard it in spring of 89. And the thing about NoFX that a lot of people, maybe younger fans, don't realize was that for that time and at that time, they were a pretty rabidly anti-PC band. You know, vegans did not like them. Like, anarchists did not like them. Like, really radical left-wing people did not like them because they sang about stuff like boobs and, you know, they didn't sing about politics. They weren't serious or anything. And they, you know, there was kind of nothing taboo, nothing that they weren't willing to sing about or make fun of, right? That was always my perception of them. And plus, Mike wrote good songs. So then, but eventually, as often happens, and it's fascinating to me, as often happens is just, you know, we all, and it's happened to me too, you start to grow up and you take your songwriting more seriously. And especially when you gain some popularity, you start thinking about things differently. And maybe things that you didn't take seriously, you start taking seriously. But the killer is always politics. So Fat Mike, about 11 years ago, 2004 election, decided to do this big rock against Bush thing. You know, suddenly he's talking about politics. He's like, dude, you're the guy who sings about boobs and doing blow.
Jokes.
Like, so when did you become a political analyst? And then on top of it, you're trying to get us to vote for this absolute stiff John Kerry, who's like Lurch from the Adams Family. You know, it was just preposterous. But there was a real, like, you know, Fat Records was kind of a bigger label, and there was a real sense that, you know, you couldn't speak out against that. You were risking, you know, possibly ever being signed to Fat if you were a younger band or an ambitious band, and just got really weird. And he started to take himself and his politics really seriously, and it's just the music got really boring, in my opinion. I mean, I haven't listened to NoFX in years because it's just kind of like pandering to the crowd.
It's very formulaic, and, you know, it's
yeah,
boring.
Gotten boring. And the funny thing is, another thing about NoFX was at the time, in the late 80s and especially the early 90s, they were known for every record doing something musically. They were always kind of pushing their boundaries musically. They were always doing something new on a record that they hadn't done on the previous record musically. And whether you liked it or not, I mean, I admired that they were doing it. And that, and they just started putting out these records that was like one generic NoFX song after another, and it just seemed lazy. I mean, it's a, you know,
Franco un-American.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of like, you know, if you sit around and like laugh about being kind of a fat, rich, drug-addled guy, that can be funny if that's not reality, but when that starts becoming reality, that's going to affect your musical output negatively. So when we went over back to Fat Records, I mean, that was our manager. I was sitting there going, and I was telling the other guys in the band, I'm like, I don't think this is a good idea. I don't think we belong back over there. And with that and many other things, including playing South by Southwest, which was really shameful, just agreeing to do that would just, I never would have done that. And I think I made a lot of bad decisions, but yeah, we were dropped because Mike was convinced I was making fun of him. And it's like, that's what you've sunk to, dude. I'm laughing about these kind of stereotypes of punk people, and you're convinced that it's you. You are an absolute stereotype. It's just
a parody of himself.
But I'm deeply offended by the idea that I would not take credit for that if I did that. That really
absolutely
grinds my gears.
Let me hit you up with some news here. Let me just try to get this out of the way. We were talking about Noisy. I mentioned it for a second. They released their third installment of their Under the Influence series, narrated by Tim Armstrong. We were talking about Tim Armstrong before. That's why I was trying to get into it. The episode focuses on the scene that is and was Krautrock, the German rock. You can find the link on dyingscene.com. There'll be yet another installment next week, so I'm sure...
Is Tim Armstrong Lint from Operation Ivy?
Yes.
Yeah, I only ever knew him as Lint.
He's actually... It's funny, you know, Ben, he's the guy doing all the narrating, and I didn't think he could speak that
well. Are you sure? I think you've got to be able to read to do that, don't you?
He has his little speech impediment intact. It's
oh,
very
yeah,
cute.
No, that thing's all fake. I don't know what the hell that is, but that's completely put on. He never spoke that way when I knew him.
What is that? That's some kind of like inner city accent or something like that?
Don't ask me, man. I haven't talked to those guys in 20 years. I mean, Elvis left that building a long time ago. When I knew him, he had a different thing every week. Like one week he was straight edge, the next week he was into hardcore, this and that and the other thing. And he settled on this like boneheaded jackass sort of gangster thug punk moron thing.
Ben, he found his voice.
I guess so. I'm being diplomatic here. You know, I liked Lint and I liked Matt from Operation Ivy. I always liked Jesse. I mean, I got along with them and they were nice and everything, but it was pretty clear that they thought they were real musicians and we were just amateurs, which in their defense, we were. I mean, we had our heads up our asses and we didn't know how to play our instruments and we sucked. So maybe they had a point. But still, you know, nobody likes to have that rubbed in their face. But they were, you know, on the other hand, they were very generous to us, too. So, you know, they let us stay at their place for like a week when we were in Berkeley. And they drew most of the crowd, you know, when we played in Gilman. They packed the place and they gave us most of the money. I mean, that was just the way people worked back then. So, you know, they were good people, but I honestly, I don't know what happened to them. But the last time I saw Lint, I didn't want anything to do with them, and I just walked past them. And you know, I was in a bit of a mood that night, but, you know.
Bob, let's go into music, man.
Yeah, let's play some more music, Bobby. I got some stuff from a band called Free Sergio. Now, Free Sergio comes from... Wait, I already did that.
No,
wait,
you didn't.
Didn't I say something about an Israeli punk band? No, that was Istanbul. I'm confusing myself. All this international punk rock is making my head swirl. Free Sergio is an Israeli punk band. And they've just released a new song called So Far, Yet So Close from their upcoming EP called Take Control. Should be hitting stores later this year, Bobby. Here it is, Free Sergio on Dying Scene Radio.
is on a road. We're so far, it's so close. It's time to take control. Walk forever in the sun. On a road, we're so far, yet so close.
This is Andrew WK reminding you that you're tuned in and partying extraordinarily hard right here on Dying Scene Radio.
Food stamps and welfare. Anybody help me out?
I got my facts from Sean Hannity.
The Idaho-based skate punk band called Up and Atom. I didn't know they had any kind of punk rock in Idaho.
Bob, that's the great thing about the internet is that you can be from anywhere now. It doesn't matter. You don't have bands used to move to California and New York all the time. You don't have to move anymore. You can be from Idaho and still succeed. It's one great thing about the internet.
Or Wisconsin.
Yeah, I live kind of in the middle of nowhere, but I can, you know, still do my thing.
What do you do out there on your farm? I know you, Bobby mentioned it earlier, but what do you do with your cows? Are they dairy cows? Or you use them for meat?
Guys,
or,
I mean, I kind of feel bad. My cows are imaginary. I don't really own a farm. I feel bad that I was talking about that at the beginning. I've been talking about my fake farm for years, and I find it amusing, and I don't like to admit. Well, it got bad because at one point, one of my ex-BM members, there's a guy down in Chicago, because I've got a whole backstory for this imaginary farm. I can tell you who the previous owners were. I can tell you, you know, what areas of the country, because you see, it's kind of a boutique operation. It's a small dairy farm, and we really just supply to restaurants. So there was this chef in Chicago at a restaurant who was trying to get in touch with me via one of my ex-BM mates, because he was looking for a new source for, you know, cream and butter and stuff. At the time, he was like, oh, he's just making up stories. So, yeah, I hate to admit this publicly, but I don't actually own a farm. I never have. I've been lying about it for 10 years and enjoying every minute of it. And if I ever decide I want to pretend I have a farm again, I'll just say that I was lying about it.
I was going to say, there it is on Dying Scene Radio. We have that confession, but, you know, at any point that could be negated, right?
See, that's the thing, and that's why I am who I am, because you never, ever know. Am I telling the truth? Am I lying? Is it real? Is it fantasy? If you've listened to my podcast, and if you haven't, you should, but I've talked about my entire public persona for the past 4 years has been a piece of performance art. And it's not really deliberate. It just sort of happened. But part of that is living on this fantasy / reality continuum. It's a continuum, my friends. And so we don't really know. It could be anything. It could be anything. And the question you have to ask yourself is, do you really want to know? Do you really want to know?
No, I mean, you know what? I want to sleep well at night knowing that Ben Weasel has a farm up there in Wisconsin. That's, you know what? I'm going to tell myself that despite the fact that you just told me you didn't have a farm.
Maybe I told you that I don't really have a farm because I was trying to elicit a certain type of reaction. I'm not going to commit to anything, but I'm just saying there's a possibility there. Maybe I decided to kind of test the waters and say, yeah, I made the whole thing up just to see how you guys would react. It's possible.
Bob, what do you got?
I'm sitting here trying to think of something witty to say, and he got me, man.
He got you. Well, the hockey game's over with, right?
Yeah, Blackhawks won 5-2. We're going to a Game 7 in Anaheim.
Game 7, that's on Saturday, right? So the day after this comes out, Friday tonight, the day that this episode drops, will be the Rangers-Tampa final Game 7 game.
Go Lightning?
Yeah, you're big into hockey. Ben?
Well, I mean, and as much as I can be, I don't have time to watch like I used to. And up here, I can't get the hot games up here unless I pay for, you know, like pay extra for them or something. And I wouldn't watch enough games to be able to justify that. But when the playoffs come, yeah, I'm a Hawk fan and I am really pulling for a Chicago-New York final. Great to have a couple original six teams in there. And I also think it would be a heck of a good series, too. So, you know, hopefully it'll happen, but I think going to a Game 7 favors the Hawks, even though we're going back to Anaheim. I like the Hawks' chances here. You know, they don't get, there's not a lot of emotional swings. They're very confident. I see them pulling this out and going on to face, you know, New York or Tampa. I don't know. I know Bob thinks that Tampa's going to pull it off, but.
Go Bolts!
Yeah, and it might be, but I think the Hawks match up well against either one of them. Let me know when we're ready to end, because I just wanted to say something, you know, straight to the fans.
Well, I think we'll just forego all this news stuff, you know. I mean, we've talked for a long time. This is a long-running podcast. And you know what? They know where to go. You can go to DyingScene.com. You want to catch up on the week's news? Go to DyingScene.com, all right? You want to reach out to Bob Noxious? Hit him up on Twitter, at Bob Noxious. I'm at the Bobby Pickles. And, you know, you can get a hold of Ben Weasel. Ben, how do you like the Twitter? Do you do the Twitter?
I do Facebook more. Twitter is just, you know, as you can tell, I like to talk, and Twitter is a little confining for my taste. So, you know, if you want to make a pithy kind of comeback or something like that, it's fine. But I'm more of a Facebook guy. You know, Facebook.com/Screeching Weasel, certainly. And we do the podcast, you know, the new album, Baby Fat Act One. It's the first act of a 2-act rock opera. It's out on Recess Records now. I want to promote a couple things, if I might. We're playing July 24th in D.C. at the Howard Theater, 25th in New York at Webster Hall, 26th up in Boston at the Royale, I think it's called. And then we're at the Regency August 8th in San Francisco, the Observatory in San Diego on August 9th, and the Observatory North Park. I'm sorry, that's Orange County, Santa Ana on the 8th. And then the 9th, we're at the Observatory North Park in San Diego. All those shows are with the Queers and the Mr. T Experience. It's like we went in a time machine back to 1993, except we're all older and fatter and balder now. But they're going to be great shows. Looking forward to them. If I may, I would like to say something to the fans, though, because, you know, direct to the fans, kids, children, and the adults among you, and the childlike adults among you, you've listened to me tonight, and you might have some opinions, might have some strong opinions, but I want you to remember something. When all is said and done, and when the spotlight is turned off, and the curtains come down, and everybody kind of goes away for the night, by gosh, I have nothing but positive feelings for the Fat Mikes and the Tim Armstrongs of the world. We're all brothers in arms, behind the scenes where it counts. No, we're not really. We hate each other's fucking guts. But I will say this. The important thing, kids, stay in school and stay off drugs and take your vitamins.
Yeah, and if you're a band, please don't hesitate to look into Dying Scene Records. We're a viable record company, and we will do... We'll go the extra mile for you, despite our conversation on this episode of the podcast.
Who, wait, Dying Scene Record? You have a record label?
We have a record label here at Dying Scene as well. We should have got the head honcho on for that question.
Yeah. But, you know, maybe it would have put him on the spot. Maybe he's just sitting there going, we don't fucking do anything. We just don't do anything.
Ben, we appreciate you so much being on tonight, guest hosting. This has been such a pleasure and honor. And
well, thank
really
you. It's been a pleasure for me as well. I thank you very much. You gentlemen have been very kind and considerate, and you have been very patient with me, and I appreciate that. And I wish you the best of luck in your future endeavors and in your, particularly in your bum dressing endeavors.
Bob, take us out.
So, yes, I do have one more song to go from a band called Freya Wilcox and The Howl. Now, these are a Brooklyn-based blues punk band. They've just released a new song called Bury Me, which you can find on dyingscene.com. Comes from the band's upcoming EP called Bare Knuckle Love. Just came out this week, Bobby. Pick it up. Find the info, dyingscene.com. Here it is, Freya Wilcox and The Howl on Dying Scene Radio.
Patrick.
And I'm Brian.
And we're Entropy.
You're listening to Dying Scene Radio.